Podcast that you're about to hear comes from a program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. These sessions have been facilitated by Christian Teusner from the Emu Tree in partnership with the Wakery RSL sub-branch. To explore further podcasts, visit thewaywewere.podbean.com. My name is Christian Teusner. Thank you for listening. This podcast is part one for Keith Fowler, with more episodes to follow shortly.
My name is Keith John Fowler. I was born at McGill on the 19th of the 11th, 1920. What time of the day or night, I don't know.
You're 102 years of age,
yes,
and a few weeks.
Yes, yes, yes.
How are you feeling?
Old. No, I have up and down days, which is only to be expected.
Of course.
I've got cancer of the bowel and I've got cancer of the liver. So, I mean, I've got a couple of shiny things I've got, which I don't really accept. I don't say I've got them. They just tell me I've got them, but I forget. Or that's out. They'll wipe that out. But they let me know they're there. That's what they're doing now. The one that I've got in the bowel is in the colon. And they don't know what that one's doing. But I've had it in the liver for quite some while. It's been fairly slow working, so it's like me, a slow working dope.
And can you tell me a little bit about your early childhoods? For example, where were you born? Your parents, brothers, sisters?
Well, as I've just said, I was born at McGill in 1911-20. My father was an ex-serviceman, 49 war, had been married. We didn't realise that when he came home. His brother also was with him over there in Scotland, and they both married Scottish lasses. Evelyn was the name, and my sister met her during the wartime here because she was a corporal of the army. She'd been stationed in Melbourne. And she caught up with her then, since she was a lovely person. I never ever met her. My father, as far as I'm concerned, I never ever knew, and neither did my sister. When she was born, and I would have been three, he cleared off. Didn't see some heightened the hair of him,
really.
And but that's that part. That's but before that, he brought his bride home to Australia from Scotland and the child. And that time the plague was going around and she died. Consequently, of that, if that hadn't transpired, this story wouldn't have been eventuating now. Because he married my mother, who was only 18 at the time. He would have been about 11, 12 years more, so older than her.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets to the story where we had the two children, and when the sister was born, he cleared off. It's been said to me, well, why didn't you look for him? I said, no, it's his job to look for me if he wants me. Mm. And that was dead end. That was the finish.
What was your sister's name?
Joan Eleanor Fowler. She was a very clever girl, very artful girl, could sew, knit, do all sorts of things. But cigarettes got the better of her, and consequently the effects of cigarettes that killed her in the finish.
Mm.
Her nieces, her daughter, children, she had five children, five daughters. They one's at Redmark, one's Broken Hill, one's at Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
One's in Melbourne. They're scattered all over the place. And they'll make trips down to Adelaide and all that. And then they often come around. They still come around to see me.
Oh, terrific.
So that's lovely. I became a loner, naturally, because of my father's way he treated me. I didn't trust anybody. I don't know why that tender age, I didn't even know that sorts of things, but I did. It affected me, that's the reason. So... Mm. I couldn't make friends. I had people I talked to, but I was always sort of getting into trouble. Not because I wanted it, but it was sort of come to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just general things and all that sort of thing. And then at one stage, one bloke regular looked like a Chinese, used to call me a... And funnily enough, he was the same name as I. His name is Ross Fowler. He's a hell of a nice bloke. And I said to Ross, Ross, if you don't shut your trap, I'm going to shut it for you. I said, I'm not Chinese. I'm Australian, born dead, born McGill. Right, right? This is up at Anderson. Okay. When I was up there. And no, but he still hadn't had the last word, so he got the first pie, I got the first punch. And he shut up after that.
That was the end.
But these are the things that used to happen to me. And
So when did you move to the Barossa Valley?
My mum, eventually she went to live in Anderson. She got to remember she's only a woman now, only around about 21 with two kids. Fortunately enough, her family, well, one sister who had a tubal birth, and which meant she could have no more children, and she used to take most of the family's children if they, you know, wanted to be looked after. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that I went to church with.
What was your mother's name?
Marjorie Eleanor Craker, C-R-A-K-E-R. And funny enough, she had four sisters by the same name. He had his own business. He used to make up the book on the greyhound racing and all that sort of thing. He had a printing show, which came to an end one time there when he was chopping a piece of wood. It flew up, hit him in the eye, and knocked his eye out.
Oh.
And he couldn't do any more printing.
Mm.
And I don't know whether it's true, but he apparently had a lot of broken shares at that time, and that's what he had to live on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's just the by.
So growing up in Anguston?
Yeah, I didn't go up there for... I didn't go there a lot. I used to go up there for holidays with my mum.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this one little room she had in the hotel. It's the first hotel when you come into Anguston. And I used to have a little... She had a little bed there, and I'd sleep there. I made very great friends with the... He's now passed on, Bill. Bill Turner, who was the butcher's son, and Bill was 3 years older than I. But I, as you can remember, growing up, I grew up very fast. They considered I was very old for my age, you know. And with Bill, we got on very well together, and he was a good mate. Every time I went up there, we used to have a good time, go to the pictures. We never had motor car or anything like that, but he was a good mate. And it was one I didn't trust. And Bill didn't die. He got killed in Western Australia in a motor car accident. The whole of his family was wiped out. It was terrible. I used to go up there, say, holiday times, school holiday times. They'd stick me on the barber's bull, as they used to call them at this day, with the rail car, sit me on there, and up I'd go and get out and go up to Mum's. And that was it. I didn't go to school. It's in my mind. I maintain I went to school there before the last episode when I went up there. I went up there for about 4 months. This is when I had all the fun. Did I ever? Well, by now I'm about 13 or 14, so that's 1933. Around about 1933. I must have gone there for nearly 2 years. Because I finished up there in grade 7 when I went there. Because I remember knowing all these kids and playing football for them, playing cricket and what have you there.
Mm-hmm.
So I must have been up there at some time and went to the school. But it's just for some reason it won't come.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's how when Ross you had all the... That was before all this, when Ross used to have a go at me. Anyway... I quite enjoyed it, and quite a lot of the girls I used to know up there, they were lovely girls. Then on this day, anyway, when I was in grade 7, getting around about 8 November, just before the exams, QC exams, we were doing copybook writing. And Mr. Snyder was our headmaster, and he never did like me for some reason. Anyway, I'm doing it, and for months I didn't realise... For some reason, instead of being in the line, I was going right up above the lines. And he came behind and he whacked me right behind the back of the head. Wow. My head nearly hit the desk. I shook, my head, and I nearly swore it. We nearly caught him something. Instead of that, I grabbed the inkwell and let him have it. And I shot out the door like a Bondi bus, and I never went back. An incident before that, though, yes, I was a lot younger then when I went up there. I would have been about 9, 10 or something like that. And I remember I'd been staying with Mum, and Uncle Harry, down the side of his house, used to have beautiful dahlias, which he used to put into the London Show and all that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and the Angaston Show. And when they were ready, I used to go down of a Saturday with an indelible pencil, and you may even know yourself to do this, put the name of the bulb on the dahlia before it was planted, an indelible pencil. So they always knew what dahlia it was, species, mm-hmm. and what have you. And I worked with this all day. By about 5 o'clock, I was exhausted. But out of that, he had a pair of long pants and 2 bob. What wasn't bad pay, I can tell you. I'm going down Murray Street, and who should be out the front was Bill. Hey, Chuck! He used to call me Chuck, the same as everybody else. What are you doing tonight? I said, going to bed. I'm sorry. I said, Uncle Harry's had me working on his dahlias all day long. Hey, he said, well, there's a good hot film on this at the theatre, at the Institute tonight. You see, they always had a film there for Saturday night. I said, what do you mean? He said, it's a bit hot. I said, is it? Well, I said, yeah, I'll go home and see Mum. And she says, okay, you just wait out there when we'll be going. I said, we'll meet to see if I'm going. So, okay, I go home. Get cleaned all cleaned up. And then I said to Mum, she said, what are you doing? When are you getting cleaned? Yeah, I had to have a bath, which was a round bloody tin with a great heap of hot water in it. Yeah, so anyway, after I'd had my bath and what have it, had something to eat, I said, I saw Bill on the way home. And he said, there's a good film. I didn't say hot film. Said, there's a good film on tonight. Would I like to go? I wouldn't mind going. She said, well, that's okay. You got how much would Uncle Harry give? I said, 2 bob. Oh, she said, there's only 6 months to go in. You got plenty. Yeah, she said, that's all right. Well, typical of the normal country bloke, as you might know yourself, the main place they go to on Saturdays is down the pub and the bookmaker's shop. Wasn't it normal? In the country, they had nothing else to do.
Sure.
And my stepfather was a good bloke, Dick Bouts. They'd family been up in Angaston for years and years and years. And he was quite good to me and what have you and all that. Unfortunately, this Saturday, he got too much under the belt. And he heard me saying to Mum about going to the pictures, and I had 2 shillings. And he comes storming down from up the top of the house and said, you give that money to your mother. I said, what are you talking about? She needs it more than you do. I said, what about you, you drunken idiot? I said, you've been down there drinking all that money Saturday. Why didn't you give that money to my mother? With that, he got real angry. He'd come up to hit me, so I picked up a bloody chair and laid him cold. I said to Mum, well, that's the end of it. I said, I'm not staying in the home. I don't want to upset your life. And by this time, she had 2 kids. One of them, they're still alive. Trevor's still up at Angaston. He's stayed there all his life. He's 80-odd, 81, and Yvonne's 85, 86. And the two beautiful people, there's a really good half-brother and sisters. And so I said, no, after that, that's the finish of it. I mean, I couldn't stay here after that has happened. I said, it would always be there between us. So without that, I packed up I had a kit bag, I packed it all up, or whatever I had, and I shot myself down to Adelaide. I went around Auntie Irons, and she said, what are you doing? Oh, what are you doing here, Kel? I said, I come to stay. Why? Because we got no room ready. Oh, I said, I don't care where I sleep. I said, because they had a shed down the back. I said, I'll sleep down the back. Anyway, they fixed up something for me.
And was that back in McGill?
No, this is back in Mitcham.
Mitcham.
This is back in Mitcham. Now, I didn't apologise for what I'd done because I was not going to be bashed by a drunken idiot. But it had nothing to do with him. But unfortunately, this Saturday, he went over the hoop. I think he won a few bob down the betting shop and all went back on the booze again. But anyway, that's by the by. Poor old Richard. He was very good to my mum, and that's what I was so pleased about, you know. But I was very sorry about that incident. I mean, I've always regretted that, but things happened like that. Anyway, so then I went down to Arnie Eyes and I said, well, what are you going to do, Keith? I said, well, I've got to get a job, Arnie Eyes. And in our church was this chap by the name of Mitchell, and he was manager of the Spring Grip of Richard Brothers, who built Chrysler motor cars down at Mile End. She got me a job down there in the Spring Grip department at Mile End. You can imagine, I'm not 15 yet. I had to put up my age to 15 to get the job. I'm just 14. And it was night, the first job I ever was night shift. And all I had to get down there from Mitchell to Mile End was a bike that weighed about 100 tonnes, one of those old type bikes. I just had to ride that all the way down there and back home again. Well, I'm quite sure of it now, but the story with this was, it was a big kiln, and you used to put these curl springs, the squab springs and all that for your seats, you know, that type of thing. And they had to be tempered. I think it was around about 700-800 degrees. Don't ask me if that's true now, I don't know. But that's about why I think I said I had to set the oven at temperature that to temper them. And then when they were all come out, and you'd put them in a tar dip, a back tar dip, and then there used to be the squabs that were made, and they had little clips which would clip them onto the squab of the car itself, where they would then form the seat. And to do this, I had to drill a hole in these, and they had to be perfectly so that they just matched all up. But you can imagine what it was like. I put up with it for about 6 months, and every night after about 4 months, every time I went home, she didn't know any eye. I used to just sit on my bed and cry. Not because I was I was so exhausted. I was completely exhausted.
So this is your age, you said 14?
14, but I put it up to 15, yeah. Anyway, I said to Arnie, I'd end it, and she realised when I finished, she could see the state I was in, lost weight and what have you and that. So she was a member of the Anna Co-op. And so she went and saw Mr. Ray, he was the general manager. And fortunately, I went in with her, and we clicked, the mate and he and I. And finished up, I was buying his whiskey for him and all this sort of racket, you know, go out on the sly and get it for him. Anyway. So I clicked with him and I got a job there. Well, he said, I reckon you'd have a good job on the baker's cart, Keith. He said, you get plenty to eat there. And I did. I was eating bloody buns. Had a wonderful time. After that,
Good memory.
Oh, after about 3 or 4 months on that, they brought me in. And they put me in the grocery department. And that was filling lockers and what have you. So anyway, I did that for about a year, I suppose, eight months. And then Darcy Cox was their window gentry. He was a terrific bloke. And I was a pretty strong sort of bloke, and he wanted somebody that was weak in the head and strong in the arms and the legs. And that was lift these big cases of fruit and all that he used to dress the windows out with, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he started teaching me how the window dressing and what have you and all that. Planning, you know, designing and what have you. And that. With that came the war. And then away we went. And away, of course, I was away 5 years, all told. Before I went away, I met a lass. There's another story about things, how things happened. What was meant to be, because We got engaged before I went away, and she's still waiting when I come back after 5 years. And she worked, she went and played the piano, my wife, at the Air Force Association.
And what was her name?
Hazel Lavinia Rosser. Was a very, very fine dressmaking and what have you and all that.
And how did you meet?
Well, do you remember footballer named David George Tilley? Played for Sturt at half-back. He also played interstate football as well. He used to get into more scraps or get more blokes into trouble by what he used to do, pinching between the thighs and the legs and nick off like the Watson. Oh, Eddie and I were mates. We go to church together, you see. This Sunday, we're going along, and we used to go to up Brown Hill Creek, up around the hills and all that. This Sunday, we're walking along up there, we're nearly right at the top of the hill, and I didn't notice it, but he'd been picking these berries. They go yellow after a while in a bush, a thorny sort of bush,
mm-hmm.
and he's filling his pockets up with him. And I said, what the hell are you doing? And I looked down, there's six of them on bikes, they're all from Kerlite Guards, all thugs from Kerlite Guards. And he starts pelting these things at them. Bloody idiots. So they're off their bike and after us. Well, they're coming up and we're going down. Over the river, my auntie had saved to buy me, this is a new overcoat. It was warm, sort of. But I didn't give a continental, it was 100 degrees, I just sort of worn it. But by the time I rolled in the ground and got grass and cow manure and all the rest of it, it didn't look very pretty, I can tell you. And when I got home today, I cop it. Not my fault. Anyway, they chased us. Well, I up with a rock and I dropped one kid with a rock. On the side of the river, the creek, over the other side, there was a one-legged man in a little buckboard motor car. And he's yelling out, "Righto, you blokes, do this fairly. If you're going to have a fight, do it fairly." Well, those blokes didn't know I'd done a bit of boxing with the gym at Mitcham, under Cousin, Mr. Cousins. He wanted me to take it up professionally, you know. To me, that didn't sound very good, that boxing game. There's too many getting built behind the ears. So, anyway, there was a big acorn tree there, and I can't find it anymore. I don't know whether they cut it down or what, but it's not. It was a beautiful big acorn tree.
Mm-hmm.
But there's five of them, and there's two of us. Well, you can't see George for dust. He's halfway down the bloody creek, I can tell you, and he's down there watching. So anyway, he made them, and I mean, it wasn't very difficult. They were all about my age, and they were absolutely useless with their hands. They didn't have a clue how to fight. They were just rat bags.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, they after I'd done three of them and dropped the ground, the rest they nicked off. So Eddie came up and said, "Geez, that was good." So I laid him one too. Not real hard, but enough to let him know. I wasn't very happy about his attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my poor overcoat. Oh, God, I never... Brand new.
Brand new. Not anymore.
Oh, in those days, things like that was like getting a gold mine, you know. Anyway, that's ironed itself out. Eventually, in meeting my wife and getting around to, it was October. It was a beautiful Sunday, a beautiful day, sunny day. We went there to Christian Endeavour. Then we had a quarter of an hour service by the minister, and this was the day where he put me up as an example of what Satan could do. You know, all this bloody rubbish, you know.
Mm.
And anyway, Eddie said to me, "Well, what shall we go down the bay? Get on our bikes and have a ride down the bay." I said, "Come on, Eddie. I'm not riding all the way down the bay." Well, and he was woman mad, Eddie. He was a straw broom was any nothing to him. Excuse me, but that's... Anyway, he was a good bloke, though, in his own way. So anyway, he enticed me to go down there. So I had to creep into Auntie Ina and say to her, "Well, look, is it okay for me to go? I'm 17 at the time." you know, but you still had to get your permission to go.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you got money? I said, yeah, I've got a few bob on me. She said, well, okay. She said, but I want you home by a certain time. I said, okay. So away we go. I suppose it would have been about 11:30 or something like that when we left. Got down there just after 12 o'clock, riding down there. So we got down there, we bought a pasty or whatever, as you normally do. We walked around the bay all that afternoon. And all of a sudden, I'm not kidding, it's like a lighthouse lighting up. He spotted two girls putting a tent up on the beach. And he said, come here, have a look down there. What's we going to, you know? And I looked, I said, what do you mean? He said, I reckon we can knock one of them off. I said, oh, Eddie, for God's sake, is that all you think about? And I looked again, one was Selma Benger and one was Norman Joe, but I worked with both of them. And I never let on to him. In the meantime, they looked up at me, and Eddie, of course, he wasn't looking at the time, and I told him, I went like this. I pointed at Eddie coming down to them. And I did, you know, so they woke up and they didn't want to. They weren't going to let on that they knew me.
Yep, yep.
Well, they get down there, and he's there. Hello, girls. Hello, yeah. How you go? Nice day, isn't it? Yes, you like to go for a swim? And he put on all the blabber. And then we come back and sit in the tent. We'd have a talk in the tent. Then he started trying to get... And Lorna said, that's about as far as you're going to go, mate. I said, you better not, Eddie. I said, that's Lorna Joe, but if she smacks you one under the chin, you'll know all about it. As Thelma was small, Lorna was tall. But they're beautiful looking girls, both of them. What do you mean? I said, they work with me, Eddie. Well, he wasn't very happy. Anyway, we had a nice afternoon with them. They packed up and went home. I said, I think it's getting around about 5 o'clock now. I said, I've got to be home by 8 o'clock, according to Artie Iron. Well, he said, we've got plenty of time. Okay, so we go by another bloody pasty or something. And we eat this pasty or what have you. And it's about 7 o'clock. We're walking down by the town hall, and all the entertainment business was on the left-hand side, where you roll the balls, you know, and all this sort of thing. You've got the high score. Got a packet of COVID A's or something. So we're mucking around there, and once again he spotted two girls again. He said, hey, look, there's two of them on the set. He said, now, do you know them? I said, no, I don't know them. He said, well, I'm going over to see them. So he went over, he's putting on an act, you know, and they just gave him the cold shoulder and said, well, will you go away? So he yells out, Fowler, will you come over here? And that's the last thing you ever say, of course, let them know your name. You know, that was a no-no. Stupid. One of the girls said, what name did you say then? He said, oh, his name's Keith Fowler. She said, oh, is it? She said, you know, that's strange. She said, but I've got a brother that Rex Fowler Hart. She said, call him over, will you? So I went over, so they wiped him, Eddie. And she said, well, where was your father? I said, oh, I can't tell you how much I said about my father. I said, he was a foul. I said, come from a family of about 15, I think it was. And I knew my grandma Fowler. She was the loveliest of ladies. It's getting a bit late, but about 7:15. I said, Eddie, look, I've got to be home by 8 o'clock. If I don't, I said, I'm in big trouble. So the girl, well, one girl was sitting on the seat and she had a toothache. Naturally, that was my wife. became my wife. Anyway, he said, can I walk you home? He said, I've got to walk up that way. We left our bikes up there, the garage there. Oh, that was Nancy Hart. She said she can. I said to her, okay, can I walk you home? No, thank you. I'm quite capable of walking home on my own. Well, I said, you walk ahead and I'll walk behind. Well, this is how it finished up. Well, about 3 weeks later, I got a phone call from Nancy at work. Mum would like you to come down and she'd like to talk to you. Her mother's name was her maiden name was Fowler. And she said, bring Eddie. She'd just broken up with her aunt, Colin Dudley. That was her boyfriend she'd been going with years. And she just, so she was on with Eddie for a new boyfriend, you see. Because, I don't know what it was on them, but they went together for about 8 months. So Eddie and I, we rode our bikes down there. We had a beautiful lunch there. She had a nice lunch for us. And then she and I had a bit of a talk. She said, what can you tell me, your father? I said, not a great deal, Mrs. Hart. I said, I don't know a great deal about him at all, because I said, I never ever got the chance. He didn't stay long enough for me to know him. And apparently he had had some injury in the war, shells in the head. And because she said, well, I knew your father well, George Volman Norma Fowler. That was his name. And anybody be crook carrying that name around with you. And she said, well, like most of your fathers, all your brothers, their brother, your uncles and aunts, said they're all lovely people, the whole lot of them, your father included. She said they were nice people, they were a lovely family, big family. And she was a daughter of a brother. And that's how she come, and she was a direct relation to my father. She was a first cousin, second cousin to me. Now, the point is this. Was it just coincidence or was it a prearranged? I leave it for your own imagination. One chance in hundreds and hundreds of millions of going down there on Saturday and meeting this girl. I met her and she was around there. This was also prearranged. Apparently she had liked me when I walked her. And so we became, so we got together. So we went together for about eight, 9 months, and then I broke it off. And then she rang me up about 2 or 3 weeks later and said, why did I break it off? I said, oh, you know. Anyway, we got together again. And then, of course, the war come. Well, before we went away, even a father came up and helped me, gave me an extra quid to buy the engagement ring. I didn't have that much dough. And bought a knife. It was a nice ring. She liked it. And can never remember whether I've ever paid him back. But so out of that, we got married. We had 2 children, as I said, Robert and Gail.
How did Hazel feel about you going off to war?
Well, she wasn't very happy. Before that, I wanted to join the Navy. That was before the war started. And I really got a dressing down on that one. But I think when the war came and all that sort of thing, I think she was the same as everybody else. Everybody was enlisting and what have you and all the rest of it. I think it was just that's her behind you there. That one there.
She's beautiful.
Yes, she's a very clever girl, that girl. Good, she was strong-willed. I could hold her hand, that was all. Until we got married. Yeah, God, she was terrific. So that's that part, all the war, and then joining the war, then coming home.
If you or someone you know would like to be captured in a podcast, contact Christian Teusner via this email address, theemutree@gmail.com. theemutree@gmail.com. My name is Christian Teusner. Thank you for listening.